chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Jim Lawler on the board. Matt Burns should be here in a minute. S&P futures are up 20. NASDAQ futures up 87 as we march forward again. Do we have Mr. John Lee?
Good morning.
Yes, how are you?
Keith and Jim, how are you doing?
We're doing fine so far. Early yet.
I was I have a quotation to read to you.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. The AI train is moving forward. You don't necessarily want to try to stop it or sit on the sidelines, says Joe Tandis, Chief Investment Strategist for North America at Northern Trust Asset Management.
Okay.
Now, for you and your readers, that is like putting a red flag in front of a bull for the chief here.
Yeah, well, it's what was the Procol Harum? What was the name of the song? Hellbound Train?
Yeah.
That was a good album. I remember that. Hellbound Train is on the track. Matt Byrne, I bet you remember that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
One of my friends from college is a very artistic sort. Actually drew a huge... The album had a pretty spectacular artistic cover, and he drew that on the wall in his dorm room.
Wow.
Did a very nice job. So a lot of interesting stories over the weekend. Market is up, as we can see again. And I actually, two things from regarding the mega Trump creatures, of which we have many. The... once in a while, you know, I'm one of these guys that is convinced that what you see in the market with the inflation and so forth, after seeing it happen many times, it's not just well-meaning public officials sort of making mistakes or not tying things up. To me, it's all amazingly on purpose. And I think one of the biggest mistakes we've ever had in office is this Scott Bessent guy. Evidently, he admitted it. I was listening to this coming home from the South Side last night. And of course, we've mentioned on the show, and people know people like this. I mean, you know, people like the bitch, basically. And there's going to be people that own 10,000 shares of Exxon or CVX, Chevron, that are complaining about the price of gas going up when they're obviously way up on the deal, right? So, I mean, you know, people will complain about everything. We kind of know that. But the interesting part is he was on a show, and I just heard the bits and pieces of it driving back from the South Side. He must have been on one of these Meet the Press or one of these things, and they were questioning him about inflation and how people, you know, have trouble going to the store and blah, 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 blah. And you can just tell, I don't know if it was a slip of the tongue or whatever, who he represents. He said something like, "You're absolutely right. People vote their pocketbook, and they're concerned about their wealth." And he says, at the end of the year, they're going to find out with these prices up this much that they're a lot wealthier.
Oh, dear.
So who the hell is he talking to or from?
Yeah. God, that's called having a 10 ears. I don't know what the phrase would be. Jesus.
I'm sure he's absolutely right for anybody. I mean, it's really, I've never seen anything quite like this in the market. Now, if it's one of your stocks, and by the way, it's one of ours for people we manage here. I look at this Microsoft, and the thing was, we have a lot of Microsoft in that we manage here. We protect. Stock was, and where were we? 527. The stock is 412, right? And I actually was pretty bullish down there, so I did something in like the 427 strike. Well, thing blew through 427 like dinner through a goose. This morning it's 467. Turns out they have some deal with NVIDIA. Now, 3 or 4 days ago, obviously,
that means NVIDIA's going to be making PCs.
Yeah,
well, it's going to be putting agentic chips.
Yeah.
Or not agentic, but putting the chips for agentic computing PCs. And,
so, obviously, that news was out to some people. The stock has not had a downtick now in how many days? 3, 4 days. This news, and the people who are inside on this stuff, they think they deserve it. It's a scary thing. But I do notice that some of my MAGA friends have... You know, when you go out and if you see them in a restaurant, they look uncomfortable because they're kind of leaning to one side, John. You know, it's kind of, what's wrong with that guy? He looks like he's leaning a little bit to one side. And I think what happens is that by getting the phone calls from Trump's kids, right, and what to buy and so forth, they've got so much money that the amount of hundreds in their pocket is so high that they're leaning. So, magnanimous man that he is, Trump is going to help him out. He's going to come up with a $250 bill, which means you don't have to have as many $100 bills in your pocket. You can cut that by 2.5, and you'll be back even again.
And aside from drug dealers, who's that going to help?
Anybody with dough. For the rest of us, try
with that kind of dough, it would carry... Scott Bessin has somebody with a wallet next to him. He doesn't have a wallet anyway. You know what I'm saying. I'm being facetious.
Well, it's just one of those things that you wonder. But the real reason, who knows? But I just, the whole idea of who's benefiting by this and what isn't. I mean, for 16, 17 years I've been on the show, and before that, all I've done is talk about how inflation is so uneven. Some people benefit and some people don't. And you can sort of pick the people who benefit and the people who don't.
And who benefits from inflation?
It benefits by people that own stuff, own stock.
Okay.
And people who own property. Because anybody who has debt benefits. In other words, if you buy the Doral, for instance, gee, we have a president who did that. If you bought the Doral, say 15 years ago, pick a number, $50 million, and you got a mortgage of 40. Okay, that mortgage now at 40 is a pimple on the ass of an elephant, right?
Yeah.
Because the room rates 10 years ago were probably 2-something a night, now they're probably 4. I never really understood that until I started reading the history of the Weimar Republic and how the farmers immediately paid off all their debts. Basically got their farms for free. Because all of a sudden, there was so much money in the system that people, they just took one of the wheelbarrows of cash that they got for selling their stuff because there was so much money in the system, walked down to the bank and said, we're even.
I'm quoting from an article in the Wall Street Journal. And when did it come out? It came out yesterday. And it is basically saying, you know, look, Alan Greenspan talked about irrational exuberance in 96, and the market tripled in the next 3 years. Then, of course, it crashed.
Yeah.
How much did it go down in 2000?
Or 19? It'd be like 2001. Your big stocks, your Qs, the Q, which is now, by the way, it's 739, made it to like, I'm going to say 125 or something. Mm-hmm. I think it went down to 25 or 28. So it went down by like 70%.
I mean, even I'm looking at this and going, geez, you know, I've not jumped into the AI stocks. I hold, you know, mutual funds and so forth. And it looks like, as a retail investor, as a normal guy out there, you go, gosh, I guess I missed the boat on this.
Well, you haven't really.
I better jump in right now. You know, that's what you see.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? It may go on for quite a while. I mean, the money is pouring in, and it's not just the money. It's the amount of leverage that you have. Every time the market is up, I mean, I'll just pick one of the stocks today, the Microsoft. I'm going to see how many let's see, Microsoft shares outstanding. I should probably know this, but I don't.
What?
Shares outstanding Microsoft. Let's say we've got 7.4 billion. So the stock is up $40. No, it was up higher. It has been. This is not near a record high in Microsoft. In fact, it was a laggard. But say, we'll just take today. It's like up $20, up $17.50. All right, that's what is it? $150 billion today in market cap. 7.5 times 20 is 150, right?
Yep.
So that's 150 now, but it's not just that. I mean, there's a lot of Microsoft here at PTI, okay? Not $150 billion worth, but now that means that not only can somebody buy $150 billion more stock, they can borrow half again as much on that. So it's really $300 billion worth of buying power. Just this morning in Microsoft. So you wonder why the market continues to move up. The amount of buying power that isn't there. In other words, if you thought that it was going to keep going, John, and you had an account anywhere, really, with some Microsoft in it, you don't have to come up with any money to buy anything. You just buy it. Micron's up another $40 today. Oh. So straight to 1,011.
It's gone up tenfold.
Yeah, it's gone up tenfold, isn't it? And, you know, and their revenue per share is $51. So we're talking 20 times revenue. Not earnings, but revenue. But it doesn't matter because it's going up. Adobe's up 15, you name it. Every one of these things. And some guys evidently are losers in this. AMD's down 21 and Qualcomm's down 24. So they're not all winners today. Intel's down 7. So this is something, we got NVIDIA's up almost $5. And those guys have 25 billion shares outstanding. So that's 150 billion right there. Obviously, some of them are down, but Google's down a little bit today too. So, but it moves back and forth. But in the end, the amount of leverage in the system is dramatic. And at some point you would think. By the way, Kevin says Savoy Brown did Hellboy train. He's right. It wasn't Poco Nero. Yeah, Byrne, you should have known that.
I thought it was Savoy Brown.
Well, you say so. I remember the song. It's been a long time. Yeah. God, that thing was. I think it was before I went to college, for God's sake. How many years ago was that? Anyway, this is the market, you know, where we're trading now, and it's sort of, you know, it's okay. You just got to be in the sections that are doing this, but when it's all in the same section, it starts to be somewhat concerning. But you know, what we're doing is we're just kind of dragging puts beneath it all, and obviously we're losing money on our insurance. But you know, if the stock goes. If you buy a stock at 100, you buy the 100 puts, and 2 weeks later it's at 200, I guess you snivel about the 100 puts you bought, but you're happy the stock went up, right? So that's kind of where you are. But is this a strategy by people that are trading ahead of it? Is it the most intense strategy of a government to enrich certain people? I believe it is. Now, if you're a Trump lover, you're saying, oh, no, They're really looking for every man. Give me a break. Think about Scott Betson.
They wouldn't even know what an every man is.
No,
to be honest, they wouldn't.
And I yesterday I went to store to buy some different stuff, and every once in a while you got to load up on things. And I bought some oil for my truck. I was telling Jimmy on the way in. I'm going to say 2 years ago the. Oil for Valvoline, you know, the good stuff, was six something a quart. Now it's eight something. The jug of five quarts of the good stuff was 21 or something. Now it's 28.50. Paper towels are like a buck and a half a roll. I mean, that's the crummy ones. I mean, it really is. I don't know how people on any kind of a budget aren't just being squeezed out of the system. And I think they are. I think they are, and as long as your stock's going up, I guess you're okay. It's if you have stock, but unlike 1929, and maybe even unlike 2001, fortunately, you know, a lot more people are involved in the market now through 401ks and IRAs than were certainly in 1929, when 7% of the population hit stock. Now it's got to be, what would you guess? Would you guys
say? Sue 401? Oh, I'm going to guess because of 401ks, 60%, yeah, 60 to 70%.
Say at least, yeah. So least. A lot of people are along with the, for the ride, you know, which is fine. The only problem is if you have any kind of, and we see it, you know, a little bit here. We used to, well, we don't anymore. We used to do this when we were Mesro. When I say we used to, Mesro used to offer this. You could get all your Visa cards and everything through us. We decided we wouldn't want any part of that anymore. But I think there's people that are, because their 401k or their IRA is high, doesn't seem to bother them to have a second mortgage or to have a high credit card bill, because the money's right there if they need it. You know, but it's not in T-bills. It's in stocks, which have been going up, 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 and nobody's worried about it. How much should you worry about it? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, today, I was sitting
alone. Let me also put a different perspective on it. Not different, but the same thing. You know, I've got, you know, Tom is the godfather of my son, 28, young guy, works for an AI company, based in the Embarcadero in San Francisco. You cannot get more AI than that. And
where exactly is the Embarcadero? I've been to Frisco a lot of times. I've heard the name, but where is it in relation to downtown or Chinatown?
It's right on the bay.
Okay.
So you just
that's the road that rides the road that kind of follows the bay. Okay, I get it. Right.
Yeah. So it's right on the bay, and so it's a former port, is what it is.
Yeah. Now they kicked the port. Those guys over to Oakland. They don't want no ports anymore.
Yeah, but you still have those warehouses, you know, the right. Piers that jut out. You still have that. And, you know, and I'm so proud of him, because he is, you know, a very responsible 28-year-old, saves a lot of money.
Good for him.
And he's going to get married next year, we hope. But he's never had a bad day either. Yeah. He's never lost his money. So,
well, maybe, you know, so
he used to work for CrowdStrike, and he goes, you know, Dad, there's, and he had, I think, 100K, or he's, you know, or he got 50K, and he sold it at 250 or three or something, because their stock has gone up threefold.
If he can get stuff in his 401k where they're matching or everything, he should maximize the hell out of that. Even if he puts T-bills, he should maximize it.
Yeah, absolutely. And they both do. Well, he does. Lauren doesn't make that kind of cash. When the time comes, I mean, we all do remember, you know, 2007. We remember 86 or 87?
Yeah, 2007 was sort of a blip. It was 2000. Those stocks that went down really never came back for two decades. 2007, everything came back pretty much across the board. Much, much less pain. I mean, if you had the top five or six in 2001, or 2000, 2001 fiasco, I mean, if you had Cisco, you know, just broke the plane, I'm going to say, a year ago. I mean, those stocks, you know, Cisco was 65. I'm going to say 3 years later, it was 10 or something, or 15. I mean, you barely, and Dell got taken. Your Dell, you can't compare Dell from those days to Dell today, because Michael Dell somehow took it all private and came back out, and now he's buddies with Trump, got this huge Defense Department contract, and the stock's to the moon. Okay, but you're not participating in any of that if you had the Dell from 2000. You're gone. You were taken private, and then it came out again.
What do you think of this proposal to not do quarterly reports, just do every 6 months?
Only certain people should have this information, John, and we're not those people. What do I think
that's
of money?
That's
what
I'm
thinking. What
do
I think of money supply only coming out a month in arrears instead of every week? Do I think that some people aren't getting that? Do I think that they told the Fed to stop doing it on a weekly basis and not tell anybody, or just not tell you and me? I mean, I did, you know, the last few administrations, and these guys are the worst, are just a progression. I mean, the whole thing is we don't count. It's only certain people who count. I mean, if anybody doesn't believe that, it's stunning to me that followers still think that he's out for them. I mean, I don't know how you could possibly think that. I'm not saying Biden was out for me either, but I never believed it. But people actually believe that this guy's for the common man. Name one day since that guy was born that he was out for the common man.
How could never.
Never. I mean, by the way, he's pissed off at the Pope and the mayor.
Which mayor?
Our mayor of Chicago, because he went and visited the Pope.
Yeah. Oh, Brandon Johnson went to see the Pope.
Went to see the Pope, which is kind of bizarre to start with. But
so I wonder who paid for that trip.
He claims donors.
Well, he did.
He did. He claims he did. Well, I mean, it's just airfare. I mean, I don't know. I mean, how many people he took?
You know what? Brandon Johnson did not fly in economy, so no, he had somebody. It was the teachers union that paid for his trip, I'm sure.
All right, well, we don't know that, but I don't think he paid for it. He claims some donors did. I don't know. Who the hell knows?
Okay, that would.
But he didn't fly Air Force One to play golf.
No, he did not. But, you know, I do wonder why. I do wonder why Brandon is going to Rome when the city is going to shit. So.
Well, I mean, people. It's politics. I mean, you go. You invite the Pope to Chicago, for God's sake. I mean, that's what you do when you're a politician. Just remember, it's a business. Just because we don't understand it doesn't mean it's not a business. They understand it. He doesn't understand it very well. The Pope's from Chicago. I suppose if I was mayor, I don't know. I'd invite him here, that's for sure. I don't know if I'd go over there.
Well, this is not Karen Bass going to whatever she was doing in Ghana. Los Angeles, I mean, I agree. I mean, he's from Chicago.
Pope John Paul was here. I don't know if you remember. He might have been overseas. The Polish guy, he came to Chicago. It was a massive deal. I mean, Chicago's got an awful lot of Polish people here, not to mention Catholics. How many people? Yeah. How many people do you have in Grant Park, Jimmy? Like a couple hundred thousand, 300,000 for mass or something?
Oh yeah, easy.
Easy. And then he went.
And by the way, Chief, most of the Polish people here are Catholic.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yep.
There's more Polish Catholic, or used to be, more Polish Catholic in Chicago than any city in the world but Warsaw.
Oh, yeah. I think it's probably still the case. Although, you know, London may have usurped that.
Well, Chicago's had a lot of emptying out of the inner city, so a lot of people have wandered. So I don't know how many. North Side, I think, is still pretty populated, but boy, the South and West Side sure aren't. You know, you notice when you drive around Chicago, and you and I have been talking about it, you end up observing when you're doing Stacks and Jacks, you end up like Jimmy Olsen, Cub reporter. I notice when I drive the expressways on the weekends, there's nothing but traffic, and yet not very many people are using it for the city. I mean, you're using it to come from south suburbs to go to the west suburbs, or the north suburbs to go to the. Nobody's getting off at 35th Street. Well, you go to North 35th Street instead of Sox, but I mean, nobody's getting off at 63rd Street to visit family, that type of thing. Everybody's coming through downtown to go some other place, which is taxing the hell out of these expressways. Last night I come back from the south side, I'm going to say 50% of the people from the Ryan are exiting to go to the Eisenhower West, which means they're going from a south suburb to a west suburb. It's not like they're getting off at 43rd and going to visit somebody. It's become more of a way, just a through expressway, which is maybe not what it was designed to be, but that's what it is. And you wonder why there's always traffic. I think that's why. I mean, nobody's using the Ryan to get on downtown and get off at 55th Street to go home.
So as Tom knows, on the 16th of May, or the 14th of May, I took my wife down. We were going to an old restaurant we've been to many, many times, and Tom was going to join us.
With new owners.
With new owners. And, it was a big thing because we kind of, we were there just, God, Tom, we spent almost every New Year's there for 15 to 20 years. And my wife now, you know, she's moved to, I mean, she, you know, we live in Crystal Lake, which is an hour on a good day with no traffic outside the city. Well, so I convinced her to come down. We're going to see our, you know, my best friend, Tom Howe, and, you know, her, you know, Tom was in my wedding and the whole bit, right? Well, 2.5 hours later, you know, an hour into the drive, I get a call from the chief here. Boy, you know, you better check the traffic. And I went,
well, Thursday night is the wrong night. Thursday night is,
yeah, I said, you know, oh, it's Tom. Tom's being negative again. An hour later, I call him. I think I'm at least 30 minutes away. Two and a half hours.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm going to tell you, you got out of the car and you're just, you're shaking. You're so frazzled.
Yeah.
I mean, just, I mean, it was like, and we, of course, didn't go to the nice restaurant. We went to the local place, which was great, which is fine. You know, the Triple E Tap, to give them a plug there. And, you know, it's just like, Jesus Christ. I mean, what, you know, where are people going? I know that Thursday nights, you know, Thursday is when I was a bartender downtown Chicago, Thursday night was termed maid's night out because the hired help on the Gold Coast would go out, would have Thursdays off, go on dates, because they had to work, you know, with the sir and the ma'am of the house on Friday and Saturday because they were always entertaining.
Those were the days, huh?
Yeah, that, I think that was the Trump class back in those days. But no, going back to my point is, you know, you spend 2.5 hours in a car, you know, on what was a usually an hour trip, your nervous system is just on overdrive after a while. And I don't know where people are going. I've got to drive in twice a week because I'm redoing a house in the north side of the city. And I'm going to tell you, it's exhausting. As I told you earlier, Tom, it's exhausting.
Yep.
I don't know what people, I mean, I don't know how they do it. I just don't.
One of the guys that goes into the bar downstairs and I talk to him once in a while, he goes, I had a client call out in Buffalo Grove. It took me 3 hours to get back. I mean, it's just really something. But, you know, you wonder where all this is sort of heading, and you see the numbers, and you can't help but look. Today just so happens to see NBC's official NFL team valuations 2025. And, oh, by the way, one of the other piece of news is that the Bears did not get any legislation out of Illinois over the weekend, and they've adjourned. So now the question is, was Indiana really just a stalking horse, or are they going to end up in Indiana? Does Indiana really want to come up with $5 billion for the Bears? That sounds like something to me where if they do that and the state votes everybody out, Miami voted the mayor out because he gave all that money to the what's the baseball team's name, Jimmy?
Marlins.
The Marlins. They gave the big, and they don't get any crowds there. But the mayor got voted out for giving the Marlins so much. Yet every night, the guy's in a skybox there, he wants to be, so it's okay for him, I guess. But here they've got the valuations. All right, what's your height? Now, again, this is kind of tough because some of these include stadiums and some don't. But I think we can all guess what the highest value team is. Jimmy?
The Cowboys at $10 billion. They've been at $10 billion for a while.
12.5.
12.5 now.
This is 2025, I'm telling you. These are current numbers.
I thought the Bears were roughly $8 billion.
All right, eight to nine. Get down to the Bears. They don't own the dairy. They are
8.9. So who's second? Giants?
The Rams.
The Rams. Okay.
Then the Giants. Then the Las Vegas Raiders. We can't beat anybody. Then the Patriots. Then the Jets. Wow. Of course, the Jets are in that new stadium. They're in with the Giants, right? New stadium.
Yep.
I actually think, I don't know, you saw, was it last week that Brandon Johnson, really threw a stink up and tried to block the state bill? He said that they, you know, we have a proposal for Chicago and the Bears should stay in Chicago. Because I think he actually blocked what was going on down in Springfield. But I think the Bears are gone. I think the state of Indiana, you know, first of all, the plot of land is an old, I mean, it's derelict. It's in Hammond. You and I know Hammond well.
No people around
we used to work
it.
There.
No people around it.
Yeah, so.
No money around it.
And so I think they're going. In the state, you know, first of all, they're trying to show their, I mean, they've done a very effective job, although they haven't had to try very hard, since they can get business out of Illinois, because that's, you know, I'm going to start to rant about Illinois. But also, you get to, you know, stick your finger in Illinois' eye, and they like doing that too. Even because the money, you know, the when the politicians vote this in, the money's not coming out of their pocket. It's coming out of everybody else's
pocket.
It's
going into their pocket, because they're going to decide who gets the Portal Act contract and who gets the security contract, and they're going to get paid off for that. We have Mr. Flanagan. John, wherever you're at, pile in. I think it's time, John, it's like, you know, we're on the group with our Notre Dame pals, and our guys are, you know, they're not kids anymore, and everybody is outraged that we're college ball is going. By the way, IBM's up another $38, say 13%. There's been years in this business where half a decade IBM wasn't up 13%. Now 13% in a day is a no big deal. Provided you've got something on your side, right? A contract with somebody, they've got a contract with what? They got $1.5 billion from Trump 2 weeks ago. So this pick and winner is coming from the, I don't know what we are. We're going into Weimar Germany, but it's not the U.S. anymore. But I mean, it's a time, Mr. Flanagan, as our attorney, we see what's happening to college football, and let's say the, you know, and I'll be blunt. I don't know why I'm not in a grumpy mood today, but I'll be blunt. The world, especially the sports world, has been totally brainwashed by these professional leagues. The baseball has a ridiculously old thing from the Supreme Court saying they're not interstate commerce. And if you believe that, I'm going to tell you I'm a jockey in the seventh race today. So all these other leagues act like they're the same way. So the idea that a team, Chicago, can be essentially put up against the wall by a football team where they went around and get other bids to leave and you can't get another team is so out there to me. I mean, if I'm the mayor...
Hang on. What do you mean we can't get another team?
Okay, my point is, why do 30 people... It is 30, or is it 32 teams? 32, I think.
There are 32 teams.
By the way, the cheapest is the Arizona Cardinals, only worth $5 billion. Buffalo Bills worth $6 even though the state's buying them a new stadium. Bengals, $6 The fact that these people control football... The idea that if the Bears stick Chicago up for $5 billion and the people in Indiana are dumb enough to build it, okay, they build it. Well, if I'm the mayor, when Roger Goodell comes in to hold me up, I say, you know, here's what's going to happen, Roger. They're no longer the Chicago Bears. So wipe that off your face. And oh, by the way, we're going to form a team here and we're going to petition to be in the NFL. And oh, by the way, we're not paying all the other owners to get in the NFL. If I open a bar, I don't have to pay everybody else in the neighborhood for the beauty of becoming a bar. If I open up a barbershop, I don't have to pay all the other barbers. This is un-American. This is against every antitrust there is. We're going to open up a team here, and we're going to support a team, and we're going to hire some ball players, and we're going to assume that we should be involved in the draft. You don't get to pick people out of college. And oh, by the way, we want in, and see where that lawsuit goes. I don't think they want any part of it, do you? They may win, given the people we have as judges these days. But the fact is, that's not America. I don't know what it is. It's entertainment for people, but we're talking about monopolies. We're talking about business. And obviously what's going on in college, letting people know, just because we like it like this doesn't mean that it's necessarily the way it's going to be. Mr. Flanagan, what's your legal... I think I have no chance, but I could make one hell of a stink, wouldn't I?
Yeah, well... It's not going to happen. You know, it's a closed system. You know, pretty much always has been. Really, I mean, it's
until it gets open.
Yeah, but you know, what will happen if it were open? I just think that's going to be.
So John, I've got a question as a lawyer. I mean, don't you like it? You know, now let's talk about Supreme Court judgments, but or whatever. But no, couldn't an entity sue the NFL for monopolistic behavior, I mean, would that have any chance? I mean, in a jury trial, I'm sure it would win.
Well, John, they don't have the exemption that Major League Baseball has.
Well, I agree. In a jury trial, yeah, it would win. I just think there would be such pushback against that ever coming to any kind of any kind of a confrontation where they would be so exposed to blow the whole thing wide open, because it's now become it's a quasi governmental agency, really, to me. I mean, all the NBA, all these things, they are so tied up with, you know, this encrusted collection of interest groups that have gotten used to a system that works for their benefit. And whenever it looks like they're not going to make enough money, or they're not going to, you know, get what they want, they threaten they're going to leave, go someplace else, and, you know, some other city will be falling all over itself to get them there. They don't want to change that. They, you know, the last thing they want is, you know, any kind of opening up of the number of teams or the number of markets. I don't even think that, you know, the media is going to sit still for that either. They like it the way it is too.
Well, okay, but I mean, people might like gladiator fights where people die, but it's not legal either.
Well, but I can't think of anything that's got such an investment of what they think is public sentiment. You know, that where people will pay whatever that, you know, they charge at the gate. There's a collection of fans that are diehard. You'll see this as an intergenerational thing in their families. They hate to see it, you know, thrown out the window or have a team leave. And you know, you lose all that warm, fuzzy feeling you have. This is all kind of a mystery to me too. I'm not saying it makes any sense rationally, but it's got such a, you know, momentum behind it that I just don't think anybody wants to touch it.
Well, I mean,
Well, so I mean, let's you know, Al Davis, boy, he didn't have a problem moving out of Oakland, and then I think he moved down to L.A. and then he moved to
Vegas. But John, you forget he sued the NFL. He was an owner and actually sued the NFL to move.
Okay,
and
all right.
Roselle was not ready for that. Yeah, because in a sense, it's suing themselves. Because he was an owner of an NFL team. He sued because Oakland would not build him a stadium. And he had a hot team. And, you know, he pretty much had them by the short and curlies. And he was able to do it. And then when they didn't do well in L.A., he moved them back to Oakland. And now he's pulled the stunt. You know, his son pulled the stunt to move to
Vegas
now.
But it's not a stunt the way it's set up. It's there's 32 people to decide. I mean, if all of a sudden, you know, pick a city, Columbus. For those people don't know, Columbus is the biggest city in Ohio. They're the one without the football team. So what if Columbus someday, they don't care because they got Ohio State and they're happy with that. But what if they did? What if Columbus is 4 million people some year? We want a football team. I know you can't have one. What do you mean we can't have one? Who the hell are you? Oh, we're the 32 people that control football. Okay. What if they said we'd like a bar? Oh no, you can't have one. What do you mean you can't have one? I mean, what are we doing here? That all of a sudden, you know, but well, maybe we'll put you on a list, and 5 years from now, you can have a team. But by the way, you got to give $10 million to all the other owners or some crap, which is what has to happen. I mean, the fact that people get, I mean, people like watching the draft, but the draft? What the hell is the draft? I mean, the fact that you can go out and imagine if there was a draft for attorneys, John. you guys wouldn't like it much. Oh, you got picked by Schmo in Boise, Idaho. You got to go there. I've never been to, I don't want to go to, no, you can't go anywhere else. That's where you got to go. I mean, it's so un-American, it's scary to me. But evidently, as long as people like watching it on TV and they like their team and it's a big deal, it's okay.
I really do think this is a good point, to be honest. I mean, I really think if Chicago sat down and said, okay, fine, you go to Indiana, we want our own team, and Mr. whatever his name is that runs the NFL now, we expect your assistance. and putting together a new team.
Well, I think what they could do under the current stuff, and Jimmy, kick in on this, you could offer Soldier Field to somebody else in the NFL at the same ridiculously low rent that the Bears are paying. But, and I would have thought Jacksonville would jump at the chance, but aren't they getting a stadium now, Jimmy?
I believe they are. That's that guy, Khan. He had threatened to move them to London.
Yeah.
Because he... That's why they get two games a year in London. They're the only NFL team that gets two games... automatically gets two overseas games. And they get them in London.
Because... So Jimmy, the Bears went there in 85.
Yes.
And, but, because I don't know, they just rotated it around?
Technically, that's how they do it, John. Now you have what, Chief? You have the South American games, then you have London games. They've now added, it went from London to Berlin.
And really? Now,
They're in Mexico City this year, right?
They're in Mexico City. They were in Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
And there's a third game in Europe in Madrid this year.
Somebody gives up a home game, and usually a team that has like the crummiest home gate gives up the home team, right, Jimmy? A home game, and
I believe that is correct.
Like
that generally is Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, so you're probably not going to give up the home gate. I don't think you're going to see Dallas as giving up a home game to go to London, but maybe. I don't know. They might be on the list. Because somehow or another, the team that gives up the home game is compensated, I think. They must be.
I know that to this day, the Bears are wildly popular in London.
Yeah, well, the Bears are kind of a they're one of the original big time. Probably the Dallas is probably the number one. How would you rank them? I mean, probably Dallas. Maybe for a long time the Dolphins were huge because their colors were gang colors.
Same with the Raiders.
Yeah, but I would say it's probably Dallas and. I don't know, who else would you run down? Maybe Kansas City now.
Kansas City, it used to be also the Patriots.
Yeah.
I mean, they watch the TV over there, so they know the up-and-coming stars. And they want the best teams. I still think what's hilarious is they're playing in Germany, and they play John Denver, take me home.
Yeah,
West Virginia, when they should be playing the Scorpions, Rock You Like a Hurricane, because the Scorpions are a German band. I mean, I know John Denver's real name is German, but if you've ever heard the Scorpions talk, you can make very clear where they're from. And everybody in Germany knows their songs. But they like to do, Going Home to West Virginia seems to be the song that they play overseas.
Well,
Did
you guys watch the? Speaking of which, did you watch the basketball game, OKC and San Antonio?
You mean Chet Holmgren's greatest performance? He's gone now. He's going to go to another team at this point.
Well,
he choked.
Well, whatever. I was Oklahoma. For those that don't know, Oklahoma won last year. They're a small market team. They had the best player in basketball, that Alexander guy. I still do, but so this year, last week, I'm just hacking around looking for stuff on YouTube regarding the market, and I see about four people on there with YouTube rants, which of course everybody gets to do now, I guess, about how the NBA wants San Antonio to win because of this new star, this kid who's 7'4" to play center, and I'm thinking, I watched game six, and it seemed like Oklahoma was kind of getting the shaft a little bit. But I never went that far with it. And all of a sudden, I see this commercial with Shaq and everybody else talking about somebody's handprint on his wall. And it's way higher. Some guy's with a ladder up there trying to fix it. So Shaq's like, hey, whose hand could that be? It turns out, what's his name, Mitnyama or something? The center for... This guy's 7'4". He's from France. He's the new face of the NBA.
Wanyama Obama.
Yeah. And thank you. I'm sitting at a limit. They already got commercials and everything for this guy. They must want this team in the finals. So I watched a little bit of the game, And I'm like going, Oklahoma City did not get a call that I saw all night long. I mean, I'm sitting there. I've always thought the NBA was the most fixed league ever from back when I watched it when I was a kid. And I didn't. I thought they were kind of over that, but maybe they really are picking this guy. They want this guy to be the new Michael. I mean, he's a great player.
You mean more than the WNBA?
You know what? I can't get. I don't understand there, and I don't want to go down this road, but the players in that league, and I wonder who the hell the commissioner is. The best thing that happened to that league is Caitlin Clark.
Yeah,
she's elevated the whole thing. Yet every game, somebody tries to kill a girl.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how the league puts up with that. I have no idea. And I don't know if it's. I have no idea what it is. I don't know if it's.
Oh God, you know what?
I don't want to go down that road, somehow or another,
as the standard, as the flag bearer for centrist Democrats here. I would say something extremely politically incorrect.
We want to get on that road.
Yeah.
But the girl is white and she's straight.
Yeah,
draw your own conclusions.
There you go.
But I don't understand how somebody. I see. You know, I've watched her a couple of times. I probably see 5 flagrant intent to injury shots a night. I mean, it's unbelievable, and yet nobody seems to pay any attention to it.
No,
I don't get it. I mean, I think, you know, a guy like Flanagan, by the way, we were talking about you earlier, John, that you were leaning to the side because you're getting so many stock tips from Trump's kids that you got so many hundreds in your pocket, you're now going to go into the 250s.
All you MAGA types have your $250 bills there, John.
Yeah, so you don't have to have as much in your wallet.
Where's mine? I'm still
that's what I'm saying, but you should have.
Don't try to hide it, John. Come on, be proud of it.
I got an option for the snafu with the Bears and the city and Pritzker and everything. Wouldn't it be nice if the city had some kind of hold on the Bears, like a draft or something else? Yeah, you can leave whenever you want as long as it's after you pay off the debt on this damn thing.
Well, that's
there you go. Absolutely.
Well, here's I'll lob one at you that really is from left field, and Jimmy's going to start winging stuff at me. If, for instance, the city of Chicago decided to build a place for the Bears, which more skybox, so the Bears that are making, let's see what they say they're making here on this particular, where are we here? Chicago Bears, they got them at $627 million in revenue. They got them with $74 million in earnings, which I'm going to say is BS.
I heard it was 150.
I would guess somewhere.
I saw that a while ago.
Well, you know, if you pay everybody in the family salaries, then it comes out of expenses, right?
Sure.
But how does somebody have the New York Jets are $730 in revenue and are making $200 million, and I'll bet their lease is way higher than the Bears. So how the Bears are down this low, I have no idea. But let's say they are. Now if you were to say we're going to give you all this stuff, and oh by the way, you're going to have twice as many skyboxes, and we're going to put a rail line where people can get right to the place. You know, of course, that would mess up the parking, and we think your revenue is going to be $1 billion. But now we really have to have a conversation. If you want to be the Chicago Bears, why doesn't the city get 20% of that? I would think that if I asked somebody to build a skyrise. A skyscraper with PTI on the front, and somebody lobbed me $2 billion. I think he's going to want a piece of PTI, don't you think? I mean, what manner of moron wouldn't?
Naming rights alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's the breakdown? How much is the TV revenue? How much is, you know, the revenue from?
You can get sort of that.
This because I don't think the Bears make that much on the revenue from the stadium because they have to pay the city.
They
pay the city $6 million a game,
right? But they don't get all of the parking and they don't get all of the concessions.
They don't own the parking lot. Well, okay, let's break it down. I think
yeah.
Now in the last few years, I'm not sure, but 10 years ago, the check you got from the networks was almost exactly equal to the salary cap. So, assuming that that's still close, all your salaries and stuff are essentially taken care of with that check, which leaves you coaches, which leaves you stadium rent, travel, insurance, mini camp, and all that other kind of crap coming out of your gate, your local radio and TV, local radio, NFL property, selling stuff, and God knows what else you're doing. So that's got to be, there's 60,000 people there a game. The average ticket price has got to be north of 100. So that's $6 million a game, right?
Somewhere in that range.
All right, so times 11, that's $67 million right there. You're right, the city probably gets, what, 20% of it, 25%? I think the Bears get, I think they have to share some of the skyboxes. Then again, they get shares of other people's skyboxes around the league. And they get shares of other people's naming rights around the league, even though they don't have naming rights.
Yeah, I think the Skybox and naming rights, they get 1/32nd because of the,
way more than the Skyboxes. Way more. I think they get almost all of that. But the naming rights, they get 1/32nd of that.
Right.
Which is why the other teams are pissed at the Bears because they don't have naming rights. The question is, why don't they? Because it was supposedly a landmark, Soldier Field. But then they messed the place up so much that it's no longer a landmark.
Right.
It lost its landmark
status. Yeah.
So, I mean, when you look at the revenue, that's not bad. But you know what I learned this from? You'll never guess, guys. Talk about a guy speaking out of turn. Duck coach, Mike Ditka. I mean, I never dreamed how that worked. And when who's the guy that left Buffalo? Was it Kraft left Buffalo? And he made the move to Baltimore? Is that where the Baltimore team came from?
No. Kraft's...
Cleveland. He left Cleveland.
No, that's Modell.
Modell. He left Cleveland and he went to Baltimore, right?
Yes.
And then Cleveland got... Where did the Cleveland team come from? Did they get a new team?
They did when there was an expansion.
Okay.
Yeah. They automatically, due to Modell's... Irsay was the worst when he moved the Colts from Baltimore to Indianapolis. He did it 6 in the morning or early in the morning. He just hauled the team over to Indianapolis.
Well, Ditka was on as the color man on TV, which he normally didn't do. I mean, it was on, I don't know, with Joe Buck or somebody. And he said, he says he's losing money. Ditka goes, how the hell do you lose money? All the salaries are paid for by one check. It was like exactly the salary cap at the time was like 180, and the number you got from the networks was like 180. And he goes, all you have to do is cover the coaches, insurance, everything else, and you got your full seat revenue, you've got Skybox, you've got NFL properties, which at the time was $4 million or something for uniform or for T-shirts and stuff. He goes, he must be gambling. Only an orangutan could lose money. Something like that. I'm sitting there going, whoa, you do learn something from the coach every now and then. So I think it's still sort of the same. I'm actually thinking the revenue check from networks might be bigger than the salary cap now.
Right now, according to AI, in 2024, the average teams made $433 million each.
From TV?
From TV.
And the salary cap is right there, right?
I believe the salary cap is somewhere in and around there, and it is approximately 60% of their total revenue.
Okay. So the 40%, the rest of the 40% is for what? Coaches? General manager stuff, mitts? That's a lot. I think you should be able to make money on that. And obviously, if you're renting, but now, the guy in Dallas, that's different, because I don't know how you, what would you think, Mr. Flynn? How would you differentiate? Because he put up almost all the money. I won't say almost all. The stadium was supposed to be, I don't think it's got to be, 20 years old? The original deal was, because I went and took the tour there, and they gave you this huge spiel. The original deal was it was going to cost like $600 million. The place is really awesome. Well, the deal was the city, because there's a big, we call it an amusement park, sort of like the place up, what's the place up on Expressway, Jen, Great America. They got like a Great America there. And I think the Texas Rangers were already there as well with a hotel. Now, off to one side, they had like a trailer park, another kind of, you know, I won't say undesirable, but an area they figured didn't fit with the amusement park and the Rangers. So the city used that as a way to clean that whole area out. And they ponied up $325 million. And Jones ponied up $325 million. The place is supposed to cost like $650 million. But as it went forward, he wanted to make it nicer and nicer and nicer, to the point where there's got to be, I can't even think of the number, guys, there's more TVs in that building than anywhere else in the world. If you're getting a hamburger, you're watching the game. If you're in the men's room, literally, you're watching the game. Wherever anybody could possibly stand, even doing what, you're maybe not in the men's room, but they're every place you could be, there's a TV. So you see why people gather up on the top, you know, just hang around, the young people, not in their seats. Well, there's a million TVs there. You can watch it right there. So, but he kept doing that. So he ponied up another almost $320 million on his own. So the total value of the place is like a billion something, of which $600 or $700 were him. So now, if that figures in, if you buy the Cowboys, I don't know if you get the stadium or if that's an add-on, how that works.
Well, speaking of the Cowboys, they actually have an exemption. The Cowboys are allowed to own the local merchandising, coupled with the massive stadium, that they actually generate $1.1 to $1.2 billion in revenue. Now, the breakdown that they have is national TV is 62%. Local is, that would be the gate, parking, all of that. Luxury suites, 38%. Team sponsorship, 10%. Well, okay, they do break it down. Concessions is 7%, and local media is roughly just above 2%.
Well, I think what happened there, Jimmy, is he, what I said, when I'm, this is old school stuff.
Which explains why his team is worth way more than everyone else's.
But he also, here's kind of the history to that. I mentioned earlier just a snide comment about the Dolphins and the Raiders. When Ditka was talking about this, we're talking 15 years ago or more, everybody, no matter, you see NFL official jerseys sold around the country, right? Not just at the place.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody shared in that equally. Even though, I mean, clearly there's probably more Bears jerseys sold than there are Jacksonville Jaguars. I just assume there is. But, and what Jerry Jones is, he actually made it a serious thing. Now, when I went down there, I didn't go to a game. I went for a tour of the place. This has to be, God, where are we, 2026? 2008, maybe. I go down there. The tour was $1,750. This is 2000.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
you're kidding.
But you know what? It was spectacular. It was spectacular just to see that place. It's something to behold. You know, just how it was built and this and that and all the different sky. I mean, it was worth the $1,750. But of course, the tour starts and ends in the place where you buy the hats and T-shirts. Right? Duh.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It got to the point where he was selling so much more stuff, and he really didn't want to be, if you bought a Dallas Cowboy jersey in his place, he didn't want to share it with 30 other people, 31. You know, I don't blame him, because he was actually pushing it, and other people weren't. So instead of the Dolphins just happened to sell stuff because it was a gang color, he said, wait a minute, I'm selling, he got to, where did he get to, Jimmy? He was like 20 or 25% of all the sales. He goes, why the hell am I sharing it with people? And somehow he was a carve-out. And I don't know if he was a settlement. He didn't win. That didn't go all the way to trial, did it, Jimmy? I think he got a settlement somehow.
No, after Al Davison taking them to court, they don't go to court anymore. They settle.
I mean, how many people in Oakland, when the team was leaving, were buying jerseys? I mean, compared to the Cowboys, which I bet they had, John and John, I'm going to guess, 6 to 7 of those tours a day, and there were 20 people on every tour.
You know, I mean, Jerry Jones has never been known to be a bad business person.
No.
Bad businessman. I mean, he's, you know, he's...
But it's his own dough. It's his own dough. So whatever he wants to do, it's America. You get to do that.
Yeah. You know, anyways, gentlemen, I'm going to Unless you...
We're going to rail about the market.
No, you know. All right. Talk to you, John. Talk to you next week.
Take care, John.
So, Mr. Flanagan, how do we... we're getting a feel for what the right stocks are. Is it too late? I mean, can you still buy IBM up $100? I don't know about Micron at $1,000. We're now talking, you know, 20 times revenue. And the thing that, you know, if I was didn't remember any of this stuff, I'd probably be doing the number where people got in 2000, 2001, where things became pretty tippy, was if a firm got to 10, 11, 12 times revenue. We're not talking earnings. Because your earnings can go up, but it's hard for you. I mean, how does Micron, if they were to go to 10 times revenue, literally they're gonna have to double their revenue. Can Micron, Microsoft, IBM, Dell, can they all double their revenue? I don't think all of them can. Now, question is if we could pick the two or three that are winners there, I'm willing to roll with them, but I don't know if I can.
Well, yeah, thinking about the whole, you know, the dot-bomb mess in 2000, and you know a lot more about this than I do, Tom, so feel free to weigh in. But the whole drive behind that bubble, or whatever you want to call it, was that here is this transforming possibility for business expansion. You know, you can get rid of all of the expenses, the traditional ones of having a business, building, you know, headquarters and hiring lots of people, blah, blah, blah. And this was just going to make, you know, the possibility of startups, you know, the sky is the limit. And, you know, no end to it. And, of course, that you know how that flamed out. But is the AI, you know, mantra the same kind of thing? It's just, you know, 25 years later, and it's turned into another species of the same thing, except now it's not about business expansion, really, I don't think, at all. It's about business concentration. So I'm just kind of, you know, interested in what's changed otherwise, you know, since then, that we now have this phenomenon that's juicing the market, but it's, you know, it's really about business going in the opposite direction from what it was back in 2000.
Well, if you're from... say that side of the ocean, where I think we all started out, I sure did. You look at markets going up, and you say, I guess they're going up because of the internet. I guess they're going up because of China. I guess they're going up because of the cloud. It's the new thing. I guess they're going up because of railroads. You know, I guess they're going up because of TV. You can, and that's always a part of it. I mean, the companies that are bring about new stuff, they generate new revenue, and they all of a sudden are growth companies and they do very well and stuff that people like and need and so forth. But on the other hand, you can look at it, has this been a 25-year game of inflating asset prices? Are we devaluing the dollar, which essentially, not in terms of pound and everything else, but are we doing this in a way to we're inflating asset prices to, and I think over the last 25 years, I've become an amazing cynic, and that's what's been happening. And we just go from excuse to excuse. I mean, does anybody think that Micron, because of AI, is all of a sudden going to triple in revenue in the next 3 years? Nobody. Who could possibly think that? Because there's no way, where's the AI revenue that Carl Ransom raves about this week? Is everybody going to pay $10, $20 a month to have an AI, you know, a more advanced AI than you get on a computer now? Possibly. Where's the end to AI? What if people continually put up more and more blocks to where you can't just steal my stuff? You can't steal my law review thing and send it to somebody else. I mean, like AI seems to want to do. I mean, is it really that? I mean, what happened to the cloud? It's still there. But was the cloud ever the reason for the market to double? I mean, our friend Kevin, who knows more about that industry, he and Carl together, he said he was using stuff at other places before it was even called the cloud, for God's sake. He was buying memory and whatever when he worked at Better World Books. Whenever it was a peak month, they'd buy stuff from other people. That became the cloud. I mean, how many people 6-7 years ago, if you replayed a day of CNBC, maybe 10 years ago, if you didn't hear the word China every 30 seconds, like AI today, you're not looking. You're not listening to the right station. Is it just, not that AI is an advance, sure it is. I mean, computers have been advancing since Bletchley Park, for God's sake. But is it the reason for a company that's been around for 25 years all of a sudden to be priced like it's a, you know, they just discovered a cure for cancer, for God's sake. I don't know that. I mean, every single one of these places, I mean, how much of it is that they're being anointed companies by the federal government? I mean, we, other than maybe in wartime a couple times, we've never seen that. We've never seen, you know, a bunch of kleptos on top of the business. And it's not just, you know, the groups in Washington stealing money. It is a governmental, I'm going to say, process. It's incredibly German/European, where everybody who's in business is controlled some way or another by the government. The government owns a piece of it, either through the place itself or through banks that they control, and the firms have their nose firmly up the ass of the people in government. It's not just we have never been like that, and now we're going that way. And I'm just kind of surprised more people don't recognize that. I mean, what if, you know, obviously people in Germany live there. It's not like the place is falling apart. I mean, everybody bitches about socialism. The people in Sweden seems pretty happy. I mean, it's not our way, but it's heading toward being our way. I think it's disgusting. It is not my idea of free enterprise. But what am I? I'm doing a podcast with you guys. I'm not a senator. I'm not a major TV. But I could see it happening, John. I mean, what do you think?
Well, you know, the idea of government being, you know, in control, or, you know, having too much say, to me, that's an old story going back.
No, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not.
But I mean, going back to the era of the railroads, and, you know, when there were breakthroughs, especially in transportation, you know, you can think about, you know, and what that did for warfare, and how that changed the whole, you know, equation of who serves whom, you know, where you got Ford and all these other places that are, you know, making the war possible, at least the way wars were being fought in the 20th century. And the government dictated that, and the industries had to fall away.
They never, when the railroads, you mentioned railroads, okay, when railroads were hatched, for lack of a better term, what the government did was said, okay, we're going to give you a certain amount of property, and you get to sell that property off to build the railroad, because we need the railroad. The Western railroads, the five of them, ended up with something like 20% of all the property in the U.S. Now, most of that was useless. It was in the middle of nowhere. Well, that's where Burlington Resources came from. Burlington Resource was a separate company from the Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy that actually contained all the mineral properties that just happened to be in the land that the government gave the Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy. You know, there might have been a lead deposit, there might have been something else. But when Lincoln did that for the Transcontinental Railroad, the first one, he never demanded that his kids get half the stock. I mean, there was never the government didn't have any kind of pull on the stock of the place. That's what's different now. I mean, people are taking chunks of these places. But yeah, did the government give stuff to certain railroads? It was the Central Pacific coming this way and the Union Pacific going west, and they met in wherever, Promontory Point. Was there involvement? Sure there was. But these were not industries that had been around for 50 years. I mean, you didn't have, I mean, it's this fiasco with this drone company that Trump's kids are involved in. Jen, they had a golf club manufacturer. And Lou's talking about a lot of the people that are doing all the, it's not just Lockheed or Boeing. A lot of your really serious, innovative work done for the Defense Department is done by private companies. They're not even public. So Trump's kids went to this place and said, by the way, you guys should be a public company so you can merge in with our place. So they merged into the golf club manufacturing company, and now they just got a $6 billion thing for drones, and Trump's kids are on the board. Maybe one of Lincoln's kids ended up on the board of Union Pacific. I don't know, but
he got a lot of business in his law firm from the railroads. So I mean,
he did that long before he became president.
No, his son, Robert Todd Lincoln.
But I'm saying he was very
wealthy off the railroads.
You know, Kevin just texted, cloud is bigger than ever. He's right. I mean, he's our genius on that. He's right. It's bigger than ever, but it never became the all-encompassing, we're all making money at it. And Kevin was the first person to say it's already competitive. It's already become a product that everybody can get. But I'm saying it's not the same, John. I mean, he was a railroad attorney. That's why he realized how important it was to build the Transcontinental Railroad, because he thought California would break off of the country if there wasn't a connection there. That's why he built it.
And back then, you know, the objectives for all of these were about, you know, kind of taming the beast, getting people into these, you know, hinterlands, joining the East and the West Coast for you know, trade and everything else. But this is before the U.S. was a world power, where all this had extraordinary geopolitical importance too, which, you know, is proven to have come true. But now everything is about geopolitical influence, it seems.
It always was. It has been surely since World War II ended.
Oh yeah, but that wasn't at the beginning, is what I'm saying. But now everything is you know, in some ways connected to you know, national security, you know, getting an edge, preventing hackers, fraudsters, whatever, from getting the upper hand, because God knows there's enough of that going on, or espionage or surveillance or whatever. It's about maintaining some kind of edge that requires cutting edge technology and securing it. Of course, this is really hard with the Chinese that don't play by anybody's rules, but it's still what, you know, is going to make or break, you know, a country in the eyes of its, you know, the people who are running the show. And, you know, AI sort of plays into that so naturally, and so kind of, you know, it's almost kind of, you know, a cliche that this has got to be something that everybody is focused on, and that everybody's going to, you know, bring the last dollar out of it, and also make sure that nobody else gets ahead of us. So it's about, you know, fomenting the idea that there has to be a really close working relationship with government and any entrepreneurship, anybody who's got a brain cell thinking about the latest,
John, don't,
whatever.
I'm going to say bullshit. You could take everything we do here and say there's a reason why it shouldn't be competitive.
That's true. I'm just saying that's the impression they want you to have.
This
culture, and of course, if you buck that trend, you know, somebody else is going to step in front of you and get a contract or a grant or, you know, something else that's going to, you know, leave you out in the cold. So that everybody is subscribing to this kind of mania, and I just, you know, it's like, you know, tulips or something else. You know,
we all know, Janet, there is always been, I use the term grease, but it's like, you know, some of our guys on the Notre Dame thread saying that the NIL thing and paying these people this kind of money to play football is the same as somebody getting a $50 bus ticket 80 years ago. No, it's not. I mean, the amount of firms that are I don't think Harry Truman was a perfect example. He didn't think people should be able to gouge in World War II. The group he ran to make sure that they went and got people who charged too much. This whole idea that AI is such a big deal that all of a sudden the president gets to pick winners. And oh, by the way, because Michael Dell picked up money for this, you know, Trump savings plan that he gets. How does anybody even know that Dell's the right recipient of that contract? I mean, was there a public process? Was there some kind of a? Does anybody know if Trump's kids, they make the best drones, or they're just Trump's kids? What is the process? It appears to be you give the guy money and you get a contract. Now maybe it isn't, but it sure as hell, it's not like most people would at least do this on the sly. These guys don't care. They put it right out there and expect people to somehow make sense of it. So, well, that's just because AI, that's the way it is. You got to be like that. We've managed to be competitive before through all kinds of problems. Now we're saying we can't be that way anymore. It's all just crony capitalism. I mean, that's where we're going. I know I'm a person on the outside looking in. That's where we're going. I don't agree with it, but I'm sure as hell not going to be able to change it. But how far do you go? I mean, you grease the guy and he gives you a contract? I mean,
that's as old as time.
No, 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 not to this extent. Not to this extent.
No, but I'm just saying that it's the phenomenon is ancient. You know, it's just.
So is that? But I mean, we have been. That's what we never did here. That's what Germany always did, right? That's the way they are. I'm not saying anything bad about German people. That's the way they are. They want the banks own companies. The government controls the banks. Try and open up a new law firm. Try and open up anything new. Try and compete with these people. You can't do it. Some people think that's all. It's like how many people think the NFL, right? It's the exact same argument. How many people think that the NFL or the NBA right now is the way it ought to be? A closed group with 32 people controlling an entire sport. What do you mean? I get to watch the draft. I get to watch the Bears. It's cool. I get to bet on them. Okay, well, that's fine. Is it America? It's not mine. Evidently, it is now. I mean, but it's... how many young people don't even know what I'm talking about here?
And the problem, the popularity of football or whatever else is kind of what's the culprit. You make things that are so indispensable. You know, how many people spend how many hours every week talking about sports? What would they be talking about if there were no sports or not that particular sport? This is all something that people have an investment in, whether they want to admit it or not. So,
but what is the
and they don't and they would like it not to change too radically. It's kind of this is where I think gambling is making such a stir, because since it is a closed system pretty much, how much more can you talk about Sunday's game with the same group of people over and over again, or whatever other game happens to be on TV? Eventually you have to start gambling on it to give you something else to talk about.
Well, the new 24 team playoff college football, I was reading over the weekend that if somebody's one of the crummy teams and they have to play a couple play-in games, even without, they're going to get rid of the Big Ten championship and stuff, a team could play 17 games. These are college kids, man. Or aren't they? They're really not anymore. They're professionals at that age. Why not make it 40 games? What's the difference? People want to bet on them. Who cares if they're all dead at the end of the year? Get new ones.
Well, that's kind of where we're going.
Yeah, what I'm saying is there any rhyme or reason to this? I mean, every week now. Now, granted, I'm not going to get. I have a lot of clients that own these stocks. I'm probably not going to get. I actually have a few clients that would come out and say this thing going on with IBM, where the stock's up this much and they got this huge counter investment, that this is not America. This shouldn't happen. But mostly, if you own IBM, this is great, right? Because you're one of the chosen. But we're not going to do it. So now the entire selection process is giving money to the president. Is that, you okay with that? I guess if it's a stock you own, I guess I am. Maybe, I don't know. If I own a Micron at 250 and now it's 1,000, I'm not going to bitch too much, am I? How much can you buy people up?
Well, sky's the limit,
I guess. It's amazing. I've never been in a situation where I backed one party or another to the point where they did something that I didn't think was, I didn't like the way Obama did Obamacare, without the cost, getting rid of any kind of competition. Okay, we're going to have exchanges for insurance. Wait a minute, Barack. All the insurance companies, half of them combined, while you've been talking about it, there isn't going to be an exchange because there's not enough competition left. I like the competitive process. I don't like crony capitalism. And other people, if they're one of the cronies, it's just like the stadium thing. If all of a sudden somebody came over here from Hammond and said, hey, you idiots, all you do is talk about that we shouldn't be giving this money to the Bears. How about you three guys, and we'll bring Kevin with us, how about you three guys get four hot dog stands? Now what? We've essentially been blown off, haven't we?
Well, we were sold out to the lobbyists and the pharmaceutical companies and lots of other things for a long time now, and that doesn't work too well.
So it should just keep going further and further that way.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, that maybe the players have changed, and that you've got some kind of, you know, specific target, a particular person, a particular family, whatever, and they're the primary beneficiaries. But it's always been about twisting, you know, the taxpayers' money into some profit for somebody or other who's not accountable, or, you know, there was no disclosure or transparency about the process. And we've gotten really comfortable with that. I'm just saying it's entrenched now. Nobody but maybe likes it. It's not going to go away.
We've slipped from immoral to amoral. There have always been lobbyists. And lobbyists, I knew guys when I was young, that said, you know, people put stuff in bills, and sometimes they lob something in there, and they don't even know it's hurting your industry. The CBOE used to do that. I mean, we paid people, quote, lobbyists. We had Patton Boggs and Blow were our guys. Tommy Boggs was our man. And we paid him, the CBOE paid him, I think, like 10 grand a month. That's back when 10 grand a month was a lot of money. Just to ride herd on every committee, everything that was going on in Congress, not to start paying people off out of the day, was to let us know if in some committee someplace somebody, some line was being put in a bill that would affect our industry negatively or positively, so we knew what was happening. It wasn't go take this guy out to dinner and vote for this. Now, obviously, you could extend that to say, well, you know, you're paying a guy off to go talk to people in Congress. We are, but there's an information game there too. You need to know what everybody's doing, it affects your business, right? So we were paying for that. Now, if some specific thing came in there, it was against our industry, then you'd go to your senator, you'd go to your people and say, hey, this is screwing us up. And maybe you have other people that have those kind of connections and you do it. But to get that to the same where, okay, somebody gives me X number of money and 2 weeks later, the same people, without even letting the paint dry on what the money I was given, they get some huge contract. And oh, by the way, whistleblowers say the amount of phone calls going back and forth to the White House and the Defense Department about getting the kids the contract. And all of a sudden we want to make that the crime, the fact that somebody found out about it. John, this is so much further than anything from our history than it is today, which isn't to say somebody isn't always been a sleazebag. They always have been. But now they don't mind lobbing it right out in front of you. It's amoral now. There are no morals. I think we've crossed over to there.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't think that government has been moral my entire life, though.
Okay, I think it's important for a real lot of people that supported these people to, no matter what they do, is to say, oh no, this is perfectly legit. This is all part of it. No, it's not. I voted for Obama. The Obamacare thing, the way he did it, was not part of what I voted for him for. Why can't anybody just say this is too far? Why does everybody have to be an apologist for these people?
Well, this is what the problem with having, you know, a republic where people vote, and everybody, I think, has to hold their nose when they vote, no matter who they're voting for. Because there's stuff they don't bargain for and, you know, revile, but they're going to have to put up with it to get some other objective.
What's the other objective?
Well, I mean, the people who voted for Trump were so down on what was happening because of having an open border that was just inviting everybody in the world to come here and take what they could until they got caught. Other people, you know, who didn't want the, you know, incursion into Iran or whatever else, they say that's on their hands because they voted for the person who did it. It's always been like that. There's nothing new about it.
Okay, but I mean, I guess I'm... Maybe it's just
about, you know, at the moment you look at the average little person and you see how constrained they think their life is at the moment, and by having a system that allows them to go out and vote every couple of years to make them feel as if they are, you know,
yeah, what a waste of time, huh?
But I'm saying this is, if it's not that, then you have, you know, then authoritarianism and,
well,
you know,
but we've got that, seemingly we got that anyway, but we got to go to break here, but I this whole thing, maybe it's just because it's happened so many times for our age group, John.
Because we're so old, Tom.
But does anybody really think that, I mean, this is going on, does anybody really think the Viet Cong really wanted to capture Australia? That was the line of bullshit we were getting the whole time.
You know, this is how it has to work, I guess, Tom. I mean, I'd like to wish I had my grandparents around so I could, you know, ask them why they were so in love with Woodrow Wilson and, you know, that brand of progressivism, because everything I've learned about it, you know, I've just begun to feel that people who were for that were completely betrayed and sold, you know, sold out. But they, at the time, they were doing what they thought they absolutely had to do, because the alternatives then were worse to them.
Well, I got to the point where maybe an apple doesn't fall far from the tree. My mother said when she was Going with the Wind as a teenager, all she saw was the parties. When she saw it as an adult, all she saw was the wounded.
It's true.
I mean, we went through the Viet Cong, we're going to take over Australia, and you had buffoons like Robert McNamara counting bodies on some hill nobody even knows where the hill was, saying we're winning. Then you went from weapons of mass destruction. We had 9/11 happen, and people forget how out of the 20 people, weren't 17 from Saudi and 3 from Egypt? Yet we managed to invade Afghanistan and stuck there for 10 years with people getting killed and blown up. And then we decided, well, when we got to go into Iraq for these weapons of mass destruction that didn't exist. And now we have the same brand of people saying nuclear bomb, just like, do you want the Viet Cong to take Australia? Just like the Patriot Act. Hey, do you want your mom raped by a guy in a turban? I mean, I guess I'm just over it. I don't know.
Remember the Project for the New American Century, you know, the sort of the white paper that came out before 9/11, saying the only thing that's going to make Americans want to get behind some kind of incursion in the Middle East is to have a Pearl Harbor type event. And of course, then it just became a question of, well, how can we get a Pearl Harbor event? We will figure out who we can blame it on later, but let's have the event,
and
we'll tell people what to think about.
Well, I mean, the people came out smelling like...
That's been going on throughout history.
But the Saudis were never held accountable to the 17 people from Saudi.
And who was, you know, given carte blanche, you know, to change the whole pattern, you know, when they were banning flights everywhere? The only family that they really cared about in this country was the Bin Laden family.
I know. Anyway, so, all right, John, we got to get a break, and then we'll talk.
There's nothing new about that, Tom.
But that doesn't mean it doesn't make it an excuse.
No, I'm just saying this, but there's no... The frustrations we're venting here are the same ones people have always had.
I can't go back and fix that. Hopefully we can fix this.
Nor can we fix these either.
Well, I think we can.
All you can do is talk about them and wish it were better.
I think you're going to end up, and what I don't want to see happen, I think people are doing stuff that are jail bound. Maybe S&P futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 3. I'm going to come back. Let's talk some real estate. Because that's part of this as well. Because obviously the property prices are going up by the day. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
All right, Brain. You don't like me and I don't like you. But let's just do this and I can get back to killing you with beer.
I'm going to say it's good for the bullet manufacturers, Mr. Byrne. What do you think?
That sounds about right.
I guess
to
we're just pissed off we're not the bullet manufacturers. What can I tell you?
Hey, we're not warmongers.
S&P futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 54. We've got now, you know, it's like every war. Some people, some families lose their kids, and other people make dough. We're just on the wrong side of that.
That's right.
I spent too much time in Veterans Museum.
No crossover.
Yeah, there's that. Well, you know, actually there was. World War II there was. A lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Vietnam, some people were able to get out of it with, like, bone spurs and stuff. Just saying, I don't know, you know, type of thing. Over in Europe, the DAX up 121.5%, FTSE down 26.2%. CAC around up 23 points. I don't know why the FTSE in the last 4 to 6 weeks, a lot of days, has been opposite the rest of the continent. I don't know why that is. But not to any big extent, just seems a little odd. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 604.9%. Hang Seng up 215.9%. Shanghai down 10.3%. Again, the Nikkei is they're supposedly in big trouble here. Let's look at the FX. 159.46 on their currency, and their panic spot is 160. So they're pouring money into the system with dollars over there to try and buy some of that back. You would think their market would be going the other way, but it's not, which is exactly what we talk about. Bonds unchanged, 4.45. The bond up 4 basis points, 2.97, looking towards 3. Japan, 2.69. These guys were 0.5 for years, so 2.69 is huge in Japan, especially since their debt load, I'll check it when John's talking about real estate, their debt load per person is even higher than ours, which is hard to believe. Oil up 256, 89.92, heading back toward 90, because evidently Israel, I don't know, are they, well, we'll talk about it. Brent up $2, 93.25. Are they purposely trying to screw with these peace talks by keeping attacking Lebanon? Our Bob's back to 308. Again, he added like a dollar to that, so we're like $4 for gas, which is about what it is in most places. More than that here in Illinois because our tax are higher. Gold down $57, 45.35. So it was up a little last week, but now it's a. Gold falls as renewed Middle East tensions fuel inflation fears. You would think if there was inflation, the gold would go up, not down. So I don't know who wrote that headline. Again, foreign exchange, we said euro, we're at 116.5, kind of where we have been. British pound, same thing, 134.6. Not much change there. Crypto, down $1,200, 72,226. Crypto's been kind of falling the last few weeks. Not sure why that is. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, everyone. It's currently 7:40 a.m. on June 1st, 2026. Weather for Chicago today, 57 at O'Hare and 58 at Midway right now. Overcast this morning, high of 73 today with a slight chance of showers later today. Tonight, low of 55 and mostly clear. Over to sports, yesterday for Chicago's MLB teams, Cubs lost to Cardinals 5-1. Cubs are 32 wins, 228 losses this season. White Sox won against Detroit Tigers 2-1. White Sox are 32-27 this season, very close to the Cubs. White Sox back again tonight against the Twins, and Cubs back tomorrow night with the Oakland Athletics. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Nancy or Rod?
We do. Yeah,
we do.
Nancy, how are you?
Morning,
good,
Nancy.
How are you? Good morning, Tom.
We're doing the best we can, arguing about stuff. That's what we do, squabbling, looking at the market and seeing some stocks up really well. Others, not so good. But so what's going on in your world?
Well, it's gotten busier. I think people are just like, you know, I can't wait any longer. They keep waiting that it's going to change, and it's not changing. So,
what do you mean by changing? You mean mortgage rates?
Yeah, and people are just saying, I got to, you know, move on with my life, which everybody can understand that one.
Yeah.
And, you know, other than, I don't think this is going to last. I think this is more like people are have to change whether, you know, kids are in summer break and they're just making their moves to do it. And, you know, that's it. So we'll see what happens. I heard you guys talking about the war. I kind of agree with John. There's going to be absolutely, until you can get everybody behind it, no one's behind it. And then, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be. We're in it now. And probably no one's, you know, everyone's happy about it or no one's happy about it. It's just one way or the other. So.
Just real quick, Nance, I promised I'd look at this on break. Japan, our national debt is $39.2 trillion. And, mm-hmm. our GDP is 32.2, so it's not good, one being higher than the other. Japan, however, their national debt is 11.3, and their GDP is only 4.4. So mm-hmm. They're in way worse shape debt-wise than we are. So when their interest rate goes from like nothing, which it was forever, up to 2.7, that's a real problem. Their mm-hmm. our public debt-to-GDP ratio is like 100.8. And theirs is 255, so
wow.
not good. It's not good at all. Germany's is the lowest. China's is higher than ours too. How affordable? I mean, this is, I was reading some stuff this weekend about the affordability of the houses, and it seems like Larissa was on Wednesday talking about the, you know, the K-shaped economy, and she thinks that the people on the lower end of the upper K. That, you know, are the people that make the 150 to 175, maybe even 200 a year as a couple, they're starting to feel some of the problems with houses and cars and all the other stuff, and which is kind of some of the people. But I mean, differentiate if you can between a lot of the people that Audrey's been dealing with lately. It's all just cash to cash place. We're trading dollars on a house that's appreciated. And all of a sudden, we don't want an upstairs. We want a ranch, and the next person has a ranch, and now they have kids. They want an upstairs. There's a lot of that trading going on. But when you go out for mortgage and stuff, you're going out for people that aren't necessarily doing that. You've got a kind of, I won't say a different level, but it is kind of a different level of just the cash trader kind of people. And your story is kind of different than odds in some ways, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't even know if I'd agree anymore that, you know, the people that are making as a couple $150,000 to $200,000 a year, they're struggling just like the person who's making $30,000 a year because their debt load matches what their income is, right?
Yeah.
And the person who's making $30,000 a year, their debt load matches them. It's the same struggle, and everyone is... I don't want to use the word hurting, but they're certainly concerned, and you see pulling back on discussions and stuff like that. And I don't know if this is really because of the Iran thing or not. I mean, that's my question to you guys. Is it or isn't it?
I think it's a...
They were struggling when Biden was in as well. I mean, they're saying his gas prices were never over $5. They were.
They were once, yeah.
There, back in 21, they were over $5 a gallon. So, I mean, we're no worse off than where we were in that industry.
Well, we weren't. We had supply chain issues with the COVID, which was a little bit, can't even pin that one on Biden. No, that's the Trump-Biden fiasco when they're dealing with COVID. It was kind of a shared incompetency there, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you look at, I think... There's kind of two ways of looking at this, and you know, John Phillip, if you look at it from the top down, and you look at it, you know, in Besson's view of the world, if you look at the markets and you look at prices and you look at the wealth has never been higher. But a lot of that is.
But don't you think it's the same people that are wealthy from before? Getting wealthy out of the blue.
Well, we reach market highs every day. So, and you always talk about people who maybe have a big fat 401k are very likely to go out and get loans in other places. It's like a different kind of leverage. But what Larissa was talking about, if you look at the top down view and you look at like GDP or spending,
mm-hmm.
She says, oh, and she used herself as an example. She's a mom of, what, she got two or three, John, or she's got a couple of kids at least. And she said, she's spending more than last year. So if you're looking at it, she goes, because the prices are up. She goes, This year we don't go to breakfast anymore because we cut back on that because I don't need that $60 or $70 for four people every week or $80. And so we've cut back. She goes, actually, I'm probably spending a little more the last year because everything is more expensive. And she goes, I probably have a little credit card debt, which I didn't have last year. So, and from my end, looking out, things are way worse. But if you look from the top down, hey, the consumer's strong. Consumer spending. So it depends always on what you're looking and what your agenda is, right?
Well, that is correct. But don't you think it's always been that way?
Well, but even... But now it's sort of even so because you've got, there's a big difference in what drives the market up. The same inflationary spiral, putting money in the system, every single time there's winners and losers. And we have a government that's in denial, and we seem to have people on TV and radio that can't make that statement. They're being shut up somehow, or they're just dumb, one of the two. But it's right there in front of us. I mean, you know, to the extent that for people to trade $450,000 is on the houses that people are selling back and forth, that's one story. Your story of a family trying to making $150,000 a year, which ought to be some reasonable money, trying to afford a house like that. Well, now that's another story, right? Good luck.
Right. Correct.
So I mean, it always is a question of point of view.
That is correct.
But
your point of view is what I wanted to mention about housing stock, because there's a ranch house down the block from me. It's about 60 years old. It was on the market for 3 days, sold at the asking price, and I can see why, because it's one level, it's got a basement, but it has minimal maintenance on the lot. There's not much grass or anything, and I thought, God, if a couple or a family was going out into the market to buy something, this is, they don't have to put a boatload of money into this to bring it up to date. That's been done. There's no stairs really to negotiate. And I think about how when times were really hot in the 80s and 90s, the only construction I saw really in the city was townhomes, things on four levels.
Yeah.
Which, sold instantaneously too. And, there were, people falling all over themselves to live in Lincoln Park and nice neighborhoods in this little, matchbox that has stairs up the wazoo. And, I think about how our family traded houses over the years, and things that looked like a good deal because you had, a lot of the rest of your life to fix up and put money into. If it was an old rambling, four square house, nobody today has that kind of time, and certainly not the money to make those kind of improvements. So they just walk away from that kind of house. So we've got a whole bunch of buildings that have been built in past decades that nobody has any interest in anymore whatsoever. And there isn't anybody that I can see, and maybe correct me, Nancy, is there anybody building anything that people really want to...
Well, John, you described a young person's house, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, if you're going to buy it and you won't maybe be able to sell it for as much money, except if you sit on it for 20 or 30 years, you have to get something that's not going to drain your finances trying to hang on to it until then. So you need something that's, cheap and something that's, still, built to last, but it's not, you don't have the energy or the money like people thought they used to have when they buy a fixer-upper or spend, 20 or 30 years tinkering with it and replacing this year and that next year and so on. I just think people's options now are so limited that, to get into the market is tough enough, but it's mainly because there's not a lot of houses that people want anymore, because they can see in 20 years, I don't want them walking up four flights of stairs to go to the bathroom or, worrying about, this feature that was a hot item back when the house was built, but now it's just a real turnoff. I think we got a lot of stuff going on in the market that is because of the choices that were made by developers in the past that we're now having to live with.
You mean a bungalow wasn't a bad idea after all?
That was a great idea.
What John, in my opinion, is just describing that we just went through phases,
yeah.
Right? I mean.
Yeah.
this was hot. You're right. I mean, this, you know, building up was great. And now the same baby boomers are now, you know, older. And we're saying, you know what? I can't do that anymore. Not because we're old. That's not it. It's because we're just more cognizant of the ramifications of aging.
Right. I think we know what's coming, you know.
Right. And so you're saying, I don't want to do this. Now, yesterday I was talking to a couple, and the guy's itching to, you know, quit his job that's, you know, 30,000 miles away. He has to drive an hour and a half one way every day to 2 hours, and that's in a good day's traffic, okay? And he says, as soon as the house is paid off, I'm going to, you know, quit and find another job. Okay, but I said, all right, can we just talk about, like, what do you need before you do this, you know, the house paid off, but then what are we doing, you know, and they're in this 2.5% loan. I said, so what are we doing about updating the house, the things that need to be done, right? And he goes, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, well, you moved in 20 years ago, right? Yeah. Okay, did you ever replace the roof? No. He said, but the insurance company said it's still really good. Okay. What about windows? And his wife said, well, a couple are rotting. Okay. So they just think they have to replace like one or two windows. And I said, have you ever painted? And they said, no, we need to do that too. But these things don't cost that much. You know what? They do cost a lot. I mean, I get phone calls all the time to replace all the windows in the house for like $60,000. I tell people, like, take a side, you know, whatever's your worst side, right? And replace those. And then, you know, do the rest of it later on. Like you're saying, stage it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So well, if you're going to have to do all of that, why are you rushing to pay the house off?
Well,
at 2.5%, and then we're going to go out and borrow. How are you going to pay these other things? And they started looking at each other like, you know, maybe it makes some sense what she's saying. Because they're paying $2,000 extra a month on their house payment to get rid of it. And they'll probably be done with it maybe in about another, you know, year. But then how are you going to start replacing all this stuff?
Well, Nancy, you maybe don't realize it, but you brought up about four incredibly unique economic principles in home ownership, which I think next time you're on, why don't we make a note and let's talk about that, because the house is a very unique thing in the sense that it's probably the only thing we own that is both an investment and a consumption good. Everything else is one or the other, right? You buy IBM stock, you're not consuming it. You buy chicken, you're eating it. You're consuming it, right?
Right.
There's not two that are in the middle. But, you know, when you mentioned, and Jan kind of opened it up, Friday night we went down to Trader's Bar and we had a couple guys from that work for, you know, the places down here. And I've mentioned on a bunch of occasions how much these people are making and how much their life is not going to be like we thought ours was going to be. Not that I'm saying you're as old as we are, Nance. I wouldn't do that. This kid, I'm going to say he works for one of the, I don't know, I have no idea. It's one of the exchanges or one of the regulatory people or something. I'll bet he makes 70-ish.
Mm-hmm.
He's got, and he's 30, 29 to 32, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking for a mate. I don't know if he's got good game, but he's looking for a mate. We'll assume he finds somebody someday. She's going to have a job. He's $30,000 in the hole for a student loan. No way on God's earth is he close to walking into one of the places like John's talking about with a bunch of stairs that he doesn't care about because he's 30 years old. Figured to have a couple kids, wants him on a different level. The replacement for those places, these kids can't afford it. There's no way on God's earth can they afford it. And that's... That's, you can say it's beautiful for a house price to go from 300 to 4.25. Beautiful for who? If you own it, yeah. If you don't, not so much, right?
Right, right.
So
absolutely.
So what you said in the few sentences you were talking about, you covered probably four economic principles that are right in our face, and nobody ever discusses them, right?
Well, they don't even see him.
Well, the weird part of it is, you know, and we can get into a political discussion about Biden trying to, you know, get rid of student loans, and, hey, these kids borrowed it, they owe it, and all these moral hazard lines of bullshit that we throw out at people. The kid's paying 7%, the young guy's. At the same time, Jeff Bezos was borrowing a few years ago at 1.5 or 2. Give me a friggin' break. Why are we scalping federal money on our young people? Why isn't that rate 3%? I mean, now interest rates are back up. It never was 3% the kid paid. Why is he paying 2.5 times what other people can borrow for God's sake? I mean, what are we trying to do here?
I don't know why Jeff Bezos would get to borrow for 1.5%. Who's he borrowing from?
I'm saying that's what they did. When the federal rates during COVID got down that low, these guys were borrowing for 30, 50 years, weren't they, Jen?
Yeah.
I mean, if you look back, Nance and Carl's on this a lot, think about it. If your housing prices are going up, where they've been going up, 2, 3, 4% a year, if you could get mortgages at 2%, how can you not make money if you can borrow money under the inflation rate? And some people have been able to do that. What, I mean, even the three of us could be zillionaires if we could do that. Right? Well, you know, you did mention, though, Nancy, you'll get a politician, not that they're all idiots, jump up and say, we need to build more houses. We got to get the price down because look at supply and demand. There aren't enough houses. Okay. Normally, that would be an A paper in an economics class. Well, guess what? Now it's not. Because the replacement value of every house, if you had to replace yours, now I'm not talking about the property and the foundation, if you were to replace yours, I'm guessing it would cost more than market value.
According to the insurance company, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, now you're hitting the nail on why everything is so backwards.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about people that they get into a home and they think they paid, well, they know they paid $250 for it, and now they expect to get $400. Yet, they never put a dime into the place. So for somebody, so if John Flanagan pays $400 for the place, he's really not paying $400 because it's nowhere near the condition it was in when they walked in, right?
Right.
When they walked in, they had new windows, a new bathroom, you know. Now the toilet's been used 800 times. I mean, the kitchen doesn't look at all like when you walked in. And the windows, by the way, probably half of them don't even open. It's not even the same product, is it? Yet so not only does the person want their 150 quote more money, I won't say profit because the inflation's up so much, they also want you to eat all the depreciation, right? Yep. Real depreciation.
I gotta tell you, but you're hitting more what I think is more the problem is the replacement value is, you know, twice what you're paying. It really skews things, doesn't it, Jen? I mean, am I going crazy or?
As part of it is because we had it too good, you know, when a lot of these places were built and we didn't realize how good it was. But I mean, I could get a house like the one I have now, two flat, which has, you know, hardwood floors, plaster walls, high ceilings, mahogany stairway, all this. I mean, stuff in the 20s, you know, was nothing special, and now it's like, oh my god. Well, I could build a two flat with insurance money, but it wouldn't look anything like this. No. Nor would I be half as happy with it either. So, what does replacement value really mean? It just means you know things have changed so radically that you can't have what you know already have if you had to start from scratch with it. So that's a pretty depressing prospect.
Well, Nancy and I, actually, I think I probably met the guy once or twice, but one of Nancy and Audrey's best friends and a friend of mine, one of her nephews is a policeman. Nice kid, veteran. He has a house in Mount Greenwood. Oh, that's where a lot of people, if you work for the city, you got to live in the city. I've never seen his place, but there's a lot of spots in Mount Greenwood where there's reasonable sized lots and not very reasonable sized houses. Well, they're all post-World War II houses, right, John, would you say?
Yeah.
And there's some that are nicer, but I mean, you know, they go from frame right after World War II to, you know, a nice 60s or 70s bungalow, which is perfectly livable today. But the dude's putting a... He's putting an addition on, but I think I'm going to make a stab. I don't know how long he's been living there. I'm going to say he spent $250, $300 on the place. I mean, that's just a shout off time. I don't know how long he's been there. Maybe a little more than that. The addition is going to increase the size of the place by, what, 40% or something? You were there when Kathy was telling us.
Yeah.
What's it, $250,000?
I think it was even higher than that.
Might have been higher than that. Well, and that's a number.
I know, it's just, but he needs it. Mount Greenwood, you have to build up because of the flooding that, of course, well, he also shut up, so we never have.
He needs it. He's got a bunch of crazy Irish kids running around.
Yeah, and he needs a room. Yeah. I mean, he needs a room. He
got a great family, by the way. I'm just kidding. You need the room. I mean, that's what happens.
Yeah, he needs a room. But I think it's just sad that we went through a phase where, you know, we had these homes and then, like, they were all building up, and now because of our own health issues, we want, you know, ranches. There aren't enough of them. I do agree there. Unfortunately, there's just nothing. I just don't see how people have choices, and we're going to have to start saying, okay, I'm going to have to live with this, and how can I adapt? We can't, you know, the dream we had as when we were younger just don't seem to be there as much anymore, in my opinion.
No,
I mean, it seems more like we're now saying, well, you know what, guys, we gotta, you know, go along with what we have, and that's it.
Well, the cost of this stuff, though, when I heard that number, I'm thinking, I mean, I know I'm when I was doing my renovation stuff years and years ago, boy, oh boy. $250,000 is a lot of dough. I mean, the thing better be the Taj Mahal. I mean, for that. But, you know, those are the prices these days. I mean, labor's expensive. Everything's expensive. I mean, the city's on you for, you know, trying to get the dumpster there. How much is that going to cost you? I mean, everything is sort of to the roof. But the point is, who can pay for it? Not some kid coming out of college with $80,000 in debt.
No. No, the college debt is hurting these kids like there's no tomorrow. It's hurting that they all have these majors that lead to nowhere.
Right.
The colleges, as far as I'm concerned, should be shot for getting some of these, you know, I have a degree in, you know.
Hey, my degree was in economics. Trying to get a job in economics.
Yeah, I
But it was $3,000 a year. Man, it's not 70. At $3,000 a year, it was a bargain. At 70, I don't know. You know, it's a different program.
It's very difficult. It's a very difficult subject. I don't think it is political. I think it's just there's so much hate that it starts spewing, and then you can just take that hate and blame it on anybody. And unfortunately, we have to find solutions. There's all this talk on TV, you know, basically about bad news, but there's never any solutions to how we figure out what to do.
Well, we're sort of run out of time, but maybe for next time, let's go through the housing thing a little bit. But I also got to lob this one at you. And this is, if the economy is actually growing, John, what would you guess in the 50s, 60s were actually growing per year? It had to be 3, 3.5, maybe even 4, right?
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like a lot, but we're not talking about inflation numbers.
It was steady. It was really steady.
If you're talking about real growth, the 3.5-4% range, everybody is sort of moving in the same path. And when you, if you look at the guy down the block and he's doing a little better than you, and you can say, well, he works on Saturday, I like to play golf on Saturday, or he went to college on the GI Bill and I didn't. If there was some mechanism why he was maybe growing 5% a year and you were only growing 3, if it was explainable, I don't think anybody gave a crap.
No hard feelings.
There was no hard feelings there. I believe that we've been lied to clearly since 2000, and that a significant part of the population, if you put a real inflation number in there, has been not growing at all. I think the growth has been close to zero. And the mental problem with that is every time you see somebody. Even I do it myself. I mean, you know, Kevin is texting me that Dell did this and that and why they sort of deserve this thing. The fact is, I feel that when something like that happens, for somebody now to get ahead, whether you're on the left or the right, you think the person getting ahead is stealing from the other people. Because if growth is zero and all of a sudden somebody's growing 10%, well, where is he getting it? If it's he or she, if it's not coming out of growth, it's coming out of my hide or somebody else's hide, right? So that's the mentality now. Whether you're on the right or the left, you think the other side is stealing.
And it's deeply personal.
And it becomes very personal. And I think that's the problem. We don't have any growth, or we have very little across the board. So when you see, you know, some people say, I'm paying too much money for education, and by the way, it looks to me like I'm paying teachers too much. Okay, they're probably right. But if you look on the other side and say, nobody can get a job paying more than $20 an hour, and look at how much the CEO's making, something's wrong there. They're probably right. There's enough of this going around. I don't know if you guys agree with me or not. You got a day, but
I completely agree.
I mean, if it's not even, people start pointing fingers. And God, have you ever seen fingers pointed more than they are now?
No. This is the worst I've ever... People just... I mean, it's just hate all the way across the board. Any subject, anything. It's just all bad news.
Well, I mean, even something real simple. You look at the Chicago teachers. Look at their raises over the last... And again, I'm not... This is not against the person teaching... I can't imagine teaching a class where everybody's on some kind of drug, and if you're not on the drug, you're bouncing off the ceiling. If you're not, you're asleep on your diet, whatever, or the other way around. But if you look at their raises over the last 25 years versus a regular blue, or I'll call, what would you call a guy in a shirt sitting in a cubicle, John? I guess it's a blue-collar worker, even though he's wearing a white shirt, right? Yeah. Anybody who's in that level, their raises have exceeded the people paying their living. So,
and they have a pension.
And they have a pension, which nobody else has. Virtually nobody else has. They at least should understand why there's some animosity. I'm not saying the animosity is correct or anything like that. I'm just saying they should at least understand that. And I don't know. My mother's cousin in Columbus, he was ahead of the... What do you call the guys, John? They're water engineers, but they're not plumbers. They man all the big pumping stations and stuff that people don't even know exist. So there's and he was the head of that union for a while. He goes, we know we never went on strike. We always settled with the city. We always knew we were making less than like a regular plumber would, but we got our nice pension. And that, you know, that was essentially the trade-off. And I said, Johnny's a terrific guy. I go, Johnny, I'm your cousin. I love you, bud. And I think that I know you never put the arm on these people like maybe other people have. I said, but when you mention the word pension 10 years from now, you have to be aware you're the only one in the room that has one.
And that's her. And I think the other thing is people cannot live on their Social Security.
Oh, no. Oh, God, no. Well,
they can't, period. I mean, it's a fact. I think people are realizing that now, and they're angry.
Well, Nance, if you got the Social Security letter, like a lot of people did last year, and you have a government, and this particular government, I think, is a succession of worse or whatever, but the letter you got in the mail was that last year, because of the inflation number, your Social Security is going to go up, John, was it 2.3%? Something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, your Medicare Part B
exceeded.
Went up, is going up like 6%. So they basically sent you a letter going, for you, the inflation's 2.3, for us it's 6. How people didn't make paper airplanes, light them on fire and wing them at their politician, hopefully it didn't hit anything. But I'm saying, how do you get that letter and not go, what the bleep is this?
No, I got the letter.
Okay.
I mean, we all did. And I just took it and said, well, this is...
What will I do with that extra $6 every month?
Nance,
I'm actually out more money than if I wouldn't have had to raise at all.
Nance, why didn't you do the right thing?
Your intelligence.
Why didn't you do the right thing? Bend over and say, thank you, sir, may I have another?
Really?
Like in the movie.
I mean, I happen to agree with what you're saying 100%. And then they wonder why. I don't think it is political. I think it's just the way the system works, and they're so used to it. I mean, why did they ever borrow against the Social Security Fund and think it was okay?
It's class warfare it's turned into, which is never healthy. And we are out of time, though. Guys, good stuff as usual. By the way, Nance, what's the mortgage rate, and how does somebody find you if they want the best job done?
Okay, mortgage rates will not be discussed.
God, are they over, they're not over 7, are they?
No. But here's the problem. I mean, there's so much to it now. It's just, anybody can give anybody a rate, and I'm like, yeah, okay, let's just see where that bottom line turns out when you look at your truth and your disclosure statement. I mean, it's so ridiculous.
Plus taxes are higher and all that stuff too, right?
Yeah, but you can reach me at 708-341-9601, 708-341-9601. I'm better off just talking to the people because I can help them more. I can figure it out. Yeah. We're talking like there's nothing available. There are. It's just people have to be satisfied with what they can afford. And usually nobody's happy with that.
Yeah, it's how much you've been doing this a long time and not blowing smoke up your behind. You're a very bright and innovative lady. How much for an average mortgage now? It seems like you're using like 80% of your ability. It used to be like 20.
No, it's tough because this weekend I had a girl that, you know, and it's just better when they just tell you the truth. She said that she had she's a recovering drug addict. She's straightened out, got a job, got like a 10-year-old girl. And, you know, she has so much money to put down. And she just went, she just named them all off. And she told me exactly what she makes. And she wants a townhouse or something like that, but it's not going to, you know, that might not happen. But there are condos that, things that are classified as condos that are, in my opinion, really more of a townhome. They're just declared that. Something like that might work for her. And in condos, the insurance is not... the insurance like for a condo might be like $600 because you're insuring from the walls inside but not outside, you know, versus, I mean, $600 a year. And insurance right now is crazy, $2,400 a year.
Yeah.
You know, when I figure now, I gotta plug in at least $200. So for her, that may make a huge difference. And it's interesting because she doesn't have to go anywhere. She's living with her parents and they all get along and stuff like that. But she's right at the cusp of what, you know, she might be able to get in. And sometimes I think people are better off getting in. She said, boy, she goes, this is a lot different conversation than I had with the other woman. She said, she just told me, you know, it's got to be a condo, and she thinks she can get it approved, but she has a collection. And I said, that's going to be, you know, that's going to make it much more complicated as to how we deal with this collection. Maybe take some of the money that you were going to put down and maybe get that paid off and put less down, and then you're rid of, you know, but you're going to get it and you're going to get in. She said, the woman just told me stop paying on the collection and don't bother. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, oh, God, that just makes things 10,000 times worse.
That's why we have Nance Ann, wouldn't you say? We got to go,
yeah,
guys.
It's tough. It's a tough. This is a tough market to be in. And I feel like I do more forward thinking for people than anything.
Well, that's
I want you to succeed. So I'm looking at the picture down the road.
Well, I think Audrey, you know, half the time is half psychologist for her people. Same thing, right?
Well, not only that, but your insurance, they're running your credit.
Well, which one of you guys said something? Market's NASDAQ's down 60, S&P's down 5. One of you guys said something that spooked the market. Must have been this Flanagan guy.
Right.
Guys,
must have been this Flanagan guy.
Maybe we'll get together one of these days, guys.
Well, I'm hoping Sunday. It's a birthday coming up here.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I know all about it. I've been hearing about it for a month.
Sure you've been. I'm sure you do.
It's impossible to miss Aud's birthday, John. The signs are all over the place. Anyway, <Yes. laughs> back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Okay, bye, guys.
Take care.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of-
control.
Right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
You have to be closing all the time.